Hello everyone. Today on Scottish Memories, we are chatting to Grant O'Rourke. Hello, how are you all? Hope you are all happy and healthy and safe out there, wherever you are. Just in case you didn't know this before we get started, if you're out there listening on podcast, did you know that you could watch the video of this if you just head over to YouTube and go to the channel The Brunfords? And vice versa. If you're watching on YouTube, did you know that all of these are on podcast? Every single Scottish Memory interview, you can go and get them there. And then, you know, you can take me about in your pocket while I'm chatting to lots of people. How much fun is that? Yeah. But today, I am genuinely over the moon because this is an old friend who I haven't actually spoke to in years. This week, we are chatting to my friend, Grant O'Rourke. A lot of you might recognise Grant from his appearance in Taggart, Still Game, High Times, How Not to Live Your Life, Wiped, Bob Servant Independent, MI High, and of course, when he played Rupert Murdoch in the outstanding TV series Outlander. Grant, hello, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you, man?
I'm very well. I'm sleepy, but I'm very well. So how's things been? How have you been keeping well and healthy and everything like that?
Yeah, it's strange times just now, especially for actors, especially actors in Scotland as well, or all over really. But yeah, a lot of theatre's been closed down, so we're all kind of have to hustle a little bit harder right now to try and get some work.
I know. It's kind of a bit difficult for everyone out there right now, isn't it? It's a bizarre time.
Yeah, it's super weird. But in many ways, though, the lockdown hasn't changed my life at all because, well... In between jobs, I just tend to sit in the house in a state of semi-retirement anyway, so it's...
That's the dream.
We're pretty well practiced at it, and I was already kind of hand washing a lot and stuff anyway, so, you know, it's just everyone's doing it now.
Yeah. I've fell in love with being in the house and being with Kirsten, especially the little ones here. I'm just like, this is brilliant. I love this.
Yeah, you spend a lot of time with your loved ones, your close ones. Like, the three of us have been in this house for 6 months, basically. So we're super close, but also super in each other's pockets the whole time.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that.
Yeah. I'm going away next week. I've got to do some filming next week in Glasgow. So I'm just going to be holed up in a hotel for about 9 days and then going to set and then back to the hotel. But... that's going to be weird because it's the first time in like 6 months that I've been out of the house more than 2 days.
And be on your own.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do with that. Like, I don't know. All my stuff is here. So I don't know. I'm just kicking about in a hotel room.
I know. Who would have thought that being an Amazon delivery man would have been the safest job in the world?
Yeah, exactly. It's a boom time. It's a boom time for all of them.
Yeah, it really is. So just before we jump in, you're a Borders lad. You grew up in the Borders.
I did. Grew up in Gala Shields, lived there for the first 18 years of my life and then left. And I've never been back since. I've been back to visit, but, you know, I've... I think you always kind of... I always intended to leave. It wasn't like for any particular reason other than I just felt like that's what you're supposed to do. You get, you know, you leave school, you go to university and you pick a place to live.
So all right, okay.
Yeah.
So it was never sort of like this is where I was born and bred. You were always like, no, I want to explore. I want to get out there.
I mean, not necessarily out of a sense of exploration, but like, I don't know. I figured out when I was about 18, 19 that I definitely wanted to be an actor. So there wasn't a lot of culture in the Borders in that respect. And so, yeah, I figured I'd have to move somewhere where there was more acting.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But being in the Borders growing up, I mean, countryside down there, I mean, it's spectacular.
Oh, it's beautiful, yeah. It's crazy now when you think about it, because it's like, I mean, I know it was only the 80s. Like, I'm 41, so it's and already it's like, I feel like it's so different generationally. We would basically just get kicked out of the house in the morning, and then I would just get on my bike and cycle to the next town, like 5 miles away, and go and hang out there for the day, and then cycle home for your tea. And I know that sounds a bit kind of twee and kind of, but yeah, that was it. You just went out and hung about all day.
But the amount of people, obviously, as I was talking to you before we got started, the amount of people that I've been lucky enough to interview for this, the amount of times that comes up, that growing up, that we all went out and explored and played and were out on our bikes and in the mud and everything like that, and it doesn't happen now.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose there's been like studies and stuff to prove that things aren't happening to kids more now than they were in the past. You know, it's not a more dangerous world in that respect. But for some reason, everybody's a bit more wary yeah. about letting their kids out on their own. And we're not, you know, the wee man is 9 now. So we're kind of, he's getting to that age soon where we'll be letting him out on his own. But generally speaking, yeah, it's all sort of structured playtime. And also, you know what? There's more stuff to do in the house now than there was then. There was nothing to do then. What are you going to do? Play with some...
I do remember when I was a kid getting an Atari ST, and it was like Space Invaders, Pac-Man, and that infamous ET game that was just awful and no one could play.
But is like, apparently there's loads of copies of that in a landfill somewhere outside Nevada.
Yeah, did you see the documentary where they went out and found them?
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they went. They did a big search and they actually found them, loads of them, just in a big landfill underneath the ground, because Atari went, this is awful, we need to destroy them all. But I had it, and it was, I can remember as a kid going, and I was a kid, you know, I was 4, 5, 6, I was very lucky to have it, but I was just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Like Pac-Man, Space Invaders, this is completely off the subject, I know.
No,
Pac-Man, Space Invaders, and I had a game called Pitfall, which was essentially the first running game, you know, you just run and jump. Loved that game. E.T., not a clue. I
never played ET, but then that's another thing, I guess, is that the computer games were fun then, but they were pretty basic. And now you can just, as a kid, get lost in Minecraft or, you know, whole worlds. Like, the virtual world is so much stronger now than, you know, it was for us. So,
but I'm still there now. I mean, I'm 44 today, actually.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you very much, my friend. And Kirsten still got me a PlayStation game.
Nice.
That's what I want. We're that generation. We grew up with the first generation to grow up with it.
I don't know if it's still the case, though, but we might actually be in the target demographic for the people that buy the most amount of games as well.
Probably.
I think it's something like 30, 45 or something, because we've grown up with gaming.
And I have no intention of stopping.
No, I mean, I don't either, but I guess I get kind of, the older I get, the less patience I have. You get to quickly figure out if a game is not for you.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Much quicker.
I will say that. If it's not for me, I'm just like, right, okay. Right, I'll have to trade this in for something else. Yeah. But then if we look at it on the plus side, by the time you and me are old and we're in the old age pension homes and everything like that, just going to be, that's what they're going to do. They're going to put us on a couch and give us a PlayStation controller or a VR headset. So that's going to be awesome.
Well, this is the thing. I feel like when this generation gets to retirement age, there's going to have to be a boom in what you would call couch co-op games, you know, where there's two people can sit and play each other on the couch, because we're all going to be wanting it in the nursing homes.
Yeah.
That's when we're going to see the renaissance for that, I think.
Yeah, but it's going to be VR headsets for Mario Kart, you know, and our chair will move with us. It's going to be awesome.
I know. I know, kids today don't know they're born in terms of gaming technology. I mean, what did we do? We just go on a bike and hang out in a hill or a field. Like, what are you really...
That was awesome. I'd have to say, I loved it. Going out and playing as a kid, and I'm sure you were the same down in the Borders. And I have to say, I mean, I love the Borders. It's beautiful. But I played rugby when I was young, and you guys always beat us down in the Borders. So I bear a grudge.
Well, the school that I went to, Galashiels Academy, were Scottish Schools champions. My brother was in the Scottish Schools winning side, I guess, in like the early to mid-90s. I don't know where it was.
Yeah, I probably played against him to be truthful. I was around if mid-90s.
You would have been about Gregor Townsend's age, I think.
Yeah.
Former Scotland captain or manager, whichever it was.
Yeah. But you guys beat us a lot. Gala beat us a lot.
Well, they were very good at rugby, and I also played for the first and second year's B team, and my rugby skill was in not getting my uniform dirty in the slightest. Which was impressive.
Believe it or not, and you wouldn't believe it the way I am now, but I had very almost Elvis-like hair, big hair, and my teammates would mock me because I would be covered in mud, same as everyone else, not a hair out of place. It would still be perfect. I don't know what I did in the mornings then, but whatever I did, it didn't bode well for the future.
Yeah, I mean, I never really saw the point, though. It's like, I could throw myself on the ground right now, but I also don't have to, so why would I?
Yeah, the ball's over there. Why would I throw it on the ground right here?
Yeah, I never really got rugby in that respect. It's like, this feels like 15 people chasing each other for a cuddle in the crowd. It's like, I feel like I could be doing anything right now. It'd be more fun. But because my brother was such a good player, I think they all expected me to also be good at rugby, but I wasn't. I was good at skiving off and things like that. Smoking, that's what I was good at when I was at high school.
So, but when you were younger, going out and playing, I'm sure you did the same as me. You know, it was all the same sort of games. The names may have been different. You know, like, I remember Red Rover?
Which was like British Bulldogs.
Also
basically.
British Bulldogs, yeah.
Yeah, it was the same thing. That was banned at our school, actually, because it was so violent.
Banned in my school as well. And I remember, and I know a lot of schools, people I spoke to have got the exact same story as me. We played British Bulldogs. It was banned, so we started calling it Red Rover and played the same game. And when they were asked, saying, "You're playing British Bulldog?" No, we're playing Red Rover.
Yeah. Yeah, they were chaos. We actually smashed a window as well. I think somebody ran into a window and cracked it. Well, cracked it, not smashed it. But yeah, it was pretty violent. I suppose for people listening who don't know what it is, it's basically one person stands in the middle and has to try and stop someone, like there's, everybody yeah, runs had, past, and you have to try and catch one person.
Teams. You had two teams either side, and you would hold your arms together, and then you'd go, Red Rover, we want whoever over, we want Grant over. And then you would have to run as hard as you could, at whoever you thought the weakest link was in that thing, and get through them.
Yeah.
And if you didn't get through them, you joined that team.
Yeah.
And if you did get to them, you went back. So, you know, you were, like, you would go for it, you know? I mean, it was a violent game.
We did a variation, I think, as well, where it just started off with one person and the entire playground would be running past them. Right. And whoever they caught had to join the team.
Maybe that's how it started. That does ring a bell.
Eventually, you end up with just most of the school standing in the middle of the playground and one person trying to get past, ideally. But yeah, and there was a lot of, it was pretty physically aggressive. There was a lot of extra punching, things like that.
I went to quite a small primary school, but I can remember, and I think I was in primary 7 at the time, and me and like 5 other people getting a row at the front of the class. I don't think they pulled the whole school in to give us a row, but they definitely stood us up in front of the rest of the class because we had essentially started the game. But the whole school had played. Literally every year from primary 1 up to primary 7 was playing this one game at lunchtime, and it went to chaos. And of course, the boys in the oldest class got the row. I don't think we had started the game, but we definitely got the row for it.
But the little primary ones, they're like 5 years old. They're babies at that age. Yeah. Like when I go to school now, to, you know, the wee man's 9, so he's in primary 5. And you see these little primary ones, I suppose they'd be like Americans, kindergartners or whatever almost, but they're babies. So, I mean, it's insane that you would get them roped in. They don't know what they're doing.
I think everyone was kind of aware of that, thinking back, because the wee ones, they run in between your legs and you just leave them be, you know what I mean? But when you definitely get to primary 4, 5, 6, 7, that's when it starts to get a bit more harsh.
I tell you, like, I don't have a lot of faith, obviously, in, like, 5-year-olds to take part in competitive sports or games like that. You have this coming for you, but the best day I ever had at the wee man's school was when we went in for the primary 1 sports day, and oh my god, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. They, like, it starts off, everyone's super excited and they all do it. By the end of it, it's like the first 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan. They're just walking about crying. Somebody's like holding their arm. That kind of thing. It's like you give them all these rules. Like, it's an obstacle course. Every single kid just ignores the rules, and every kid who doesn't win starts crying. So until it's basically just like 50 crying 5-year-olds being told to take part in games. It's honestly, it was so entertaining. But yeah, they're pretty intense.
Sports days were intense at school, though. I've still got a picture, and I know my old school friend watches these interviews. His name's Joseph, or Joe. And I've got a picture of us winning the wheelbarrow race in, like, primary 1. That was, like, you know, that's competitive.
That's tough. Yeah. That requires upper body strength. Yeah. I was actually
I think
best.
The picture itself was essentially me just throwing him over the line.
yeah. It's always that way. It's like with the egg and spoon race. You always just, if you can't get away with holding the egg on the thing, you just hoy the egg over the finish line and run for it. Yeah, I was a pretty gifted sack racer.
All right,
best in my class. I represented my primary school at the local Brawlads Day games, and I was in the sack race. And I was like 20 meters ahead of everyone because I'd figured out pretty early on about the putting your feet in the corner and just running.
Right.
And I was doing so well, but you know, I ended up falling at the last, getting second place, gutted. That would have been
not that you bear a grudge.
Well, it was my own fault, but it's like, it's just that difference. One trip is the difference between sporting glory and a silver medal, second place.
We're Scottish. It's, we know all about not winning, you know, when it comes to sports. So.
Oh, God, yeah, second place would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Second place would be a dream. Quarterfinals of anything would be a dream. Or just
to take part, yeah.
Curling. Remember, we won curling, remember, a little while ago. And was it the Olympics or the Commonwealth Games a few years ago? We won the curling. And I remember that being huge. They were everywhere here.
Yeah, that was the Winter Olympics, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. And it was You'd think we'd be better at Winter Olympics in general.
Yeah, but you don't get many Winter Olympics in rain and sludge.
Yeah, that's true. They should have a Greek Olympics then.
Yeah, it would do great. It would do great. The miserable Olympics.
Just, we'd be good at that. Like running for a bus in the rain, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, oh, God.
Yeah.
Or giving up halfway through and going, oh, well, I'm wet.
Yeah. That's fine. I'll get the next one. Or lighting a fag when it's windy, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's been a long time. I quit smoking a long time ago. But yeah, I could always manage to get that lit.
Yeah, I know. It's
so when you were growing up, obviously you were in the Borders. Holiday wise, was it Scottish holidays? Did you tour Scotland as a kid?
It was. I mean, when we went, wherever we went, I had no idea where we were. And this is something that I've carried
nothing,
into
much
my life.
There, mate.
Yeah, I know. It's like when I did Outlander. Everybody used to always say, well, like, what was your favourite location that you filmed on? I'm like, I have no idea. The driver would pick us up and I'd be like, oh, there's a castle there. I wonder where we are. That was it. It was basically, you just went, we've crossed the Forth Road Bridge, so we're maybe in Fife. I don't know. But
that was
let me
rip up that question, because that was going to be one of my questions later. Where did you enjoy filming with Outlander?
We'll talk about it later. There were some locations that I do remember. But generally speaking, I've always had that thing of apparently we went on holiday to Eyemouth.
Right.
Apparently
we went on holiday to Eyemouth. I think
I was very young at the time. Yeah, I was very young at the time. I mean, my mum used to have a caravan in Berwick-upon-Tweed, which is a lovely town. It's England, technically, but it's England, I guess.
Yeah, Berwick's up on Tweed, you're right, it's lovely, but it's one of these places that it feels like it can't quite make up its mind. Or it has made up its mind, but it's stuck in the other one.
Berwick upon Tweed, they play football in Scotland, but it's in England, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like it's about as Scottish as a town in England can be. But we'd go and... We had this caravan that I'd get dragged along to the weekends sometimes. And essentially, my little brother was 10 years younger than me, so I was a glorified babysitter. But we used to spend a lot of time there. I mean, we'd go abroad as well. But I never knew where I was. We moved around a lot as well. My mum moved house every 2 years, basically. So after a while, I was just, early on, I had this sense of impermanence. Wherever you are, you'll be somewhere else soon, so don't worry about it.
I suppose your mum's quite lucky you didn't just wander off to one of your old houses one day.
Yeah, exactly. It was hard to keep up, but I was like, we'd lived in like 4 or 5 different houses around the town by the time I was like 10. So that I can remember, and there was a few more that I can't remember.
My mum and dad are still in the same house that I essentially grew up in. Like, I did grow up in, and they've never moved. They're still in exactly the same space. So that sort of moving about thing, I've moved about a lot as I became an adult. I've lived all over Edinburgh, I mean, back to, I mean, you didn't do a massive long stint at the Dungeons, but I remember you being there, but I couldn't tell you where I lived at the time then, because I've lived in so many different places at Edinburgh, and especially when I lived in London, things as well. But yeah, when I was a kid, we were one house the whole time, never moved.
Wow. So they still live in the house that you grew up in?
Yeah.
How do, what's like the memory of that? Has the memory of that place changed for you then? Like, do you still feel like, do you still have that same mindset of when you were a kid when you go there, or is it a different place now?
No, it's the same place, but gradually your brain starts to disassociate it as your house.
Right.
You know what I mean? Growing up, and even when I still lived in London and I came home from college, or when I was acting in London and when I came back up, that was still my house. You know what I mean? But then as I moved up here and started to... Probably when I started to have more longer stints in places, because I think the shortest I stayed in a place in town was probably about a year before I moved. So, but yeah, well, I think once I initially moved out of it being up here rather than being in London, I think I stopped associating it as being my house and being my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
But when I lived in London, even though I lived in London for 6 years, I still thought, when I went home, that's my house. And my old room, I mean, it's not my old room now. It's essentially a glorified storeroom now, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got stuff in it. It bears no resemblance to the room that I once lived in. Thank goodness, because it would still have a Kylie Minogue poster above my bed. the house itself is still, it feels the same every time I go in, but it's just, it's my parents' house. Yeah, it's not something I've thought about till you mentioned it, but yeah. When you moved up then, when you moved out of the borders, I mean, I'm done. Where did you go?
I lived in Kirkcaldy for a bit. I went to Fife College, a college that was attended also by Ewan McGregor, and the Proclaimers were in the first year of the acting course there.
But it's did they do the acting course? I didn't know they did the acting course.
I think so, yeah. I think they were on the first year. I was there for a couple of years. I didn't really, you know, I wasn't really the most motivated in terms of like, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do that. I didn't really know what I was doing. So I was kind of just doing it as an introductory course. So I was in Kirkcaldy for like 2 or 3 years. And then I sort of finished there and didn't know what I was going to do. And I moved back home for a little bit. And then I moved up to a village in the Highlands. Once I'd auditioned to get into the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama, I went up to a village called Shieldaig, which is up in Wester Ross, one of the most like unbelievably beautiful little villages you've ever seen. excuse me. I worked in a hotel there, so they gave me like my food and board for free. So I was basically just there to save money to go to college and drink a lot in the end, which is what happened. But it was like a village of about 150 people. And the pub, when I got there, the pub at the hotel has this giant window, like which seemed kind of out of place at the time. And then when you stand behind the bar and look out, there's an island in the middle of it, which is a protected island in the middle of the loch, a gigantic loch, or maybe it's an inlet, I don't know. But there's this huge gigantic loch, an island in the middle, which is full of protected wildlife. And then the sun would set behind the island. So it was this beautiful silhouette of an island with just like bright orange red sky behind it. It's like one of the most sensational views that a barman could ever have. And I worked there for a bit, and then about 6-8 months, and then moved to Glasgow, and then lived in Glasgow for about 5 years. And then after that, I met my wife in Edinburgh, and I moved through Edinburgh, and that was about roughly the time I met you when you worked at the Edinburgh Dungeons.
Yeah. And you became one of my biggest fans with my pub quiz.
Oh, I forgot about the pub quiz, yeah.
Yeah, you and your better half were always at the pub quiz.
Yeah, no, of course. I remember, like, we spent a lot of time in the pub, yeah. I mean, I wasn't, because that's the thing, I was only there for about 4 weeks, but because it's the Dungeons, it felt like longer.
Yeah. You weren't, but then even when you left, you still kept coming at the quiz.
Yes, that sounds like me. I did enjoy a pub quiz in those days.
Nothing wrong with a pub quiz. I was very proud of my pub quiz. I love my pub quiz.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great skill. I've always sort of like the idea of doing a pub quiz, but I don't want to do any of the work. I've always liked the idea of doing like a vague pub quiz, right? Where the questions are, where? And that's it. And there is an answer, but it just keeps carrying on and rolling over until somebody gets it right. You know, and the answer will be like Budapest. And right, until, okay. Yeah, it's a place. It's definitely somewhere.
So if someone gives you an answer, then you say no. So then they know that that's not it. And then we just keep going till we've essentially been around the world.
Basically, no. It'll be, well, one question, where every team hands in their answers. No one got it this week. It'll be back next week. The next question is, why? And you know, it'll be stuff like that. Name the colour. And it'll be, you know, it'll be, it'll be a very subjective pub quiz that would really frustrate people. Yeah, but I think you get a lot of loyal customers who would come back because they'd be like, I'm going to get it.
It's funny, I had something like that. I don't know if I had this when you were coming, but later on we started a safe with a 4-digit code. Oh. And all the entry fees that every team paid to play the quiz went into the safe.
Oh.
So the winning team at the end would get a guess at the 4-digit code. And if they got no numbers right, then I was like, nope, none of those numbers are right. And they'd have to be in the right place. I'd maybe go, one of the numbers is right, but it's in the wrong place. And then eventually I'd say, right, say it was 7132. And they got one team eventually put 7 as the first number. I would say, right, we've got the first number. We know the first number is 7. And then that would stay up. And then and then gradually, as the money went up in the safe, and the safe gradually got more and more full of money, the quizzes would get busier and busier and busier. Because, you know, the word would start to go around, oh, there's like 300 quid in the safe now, and we've got two numbers. It was like amazing. So then it would keep building. And I do remember, like, when it had rolled for a while, and it must have been about maybe 400 quid in there or something. For a pub quiz, that's not bad, you know what I mean? For a local pub quiz.
Yeah.
The pub would be absolutely chock-a-block, and there would be two or three teams. By the time it got to the last, you know, the last bit, there'd be two or three teams that I'd be like, it's gonna go this week, because there'd be two or three teams that had been coming loyally and they would have it. You know, they would know what that last number is. All they needed to do was win the quiz.
Yeah.
So on that week, it would be like the pub would be chock-a-block. People would be going for it. The winning team, if it wasn't one of the three teams that knew, you could see those three teams going, oh, God! And it would go again. And then as soon as that money was won, when we started again, the quiz would be empty the following week. And then we'd have a phase of having to build up again until the money build up and the things build
up.
Yeah,
it's like the lottery. You don't play it unless there's like 100 million rollover. You know what I mean?
I know. As if I'd complain at winning £1 million, you know what I mean? No, it has to be 100 million.
I know. Fuck, I'm not going to take part. I don't want 2.4 million. I need 132 million to achieve my dreams.
I need to pay off the house first. I mean, that's a massive chunk of that gone. So.
2.3 million won't get you anything these days. You know what I mean? That's just, it's not enough to be, it's not enough to retire, but it's enough to, like, enough money to worry about. You know what I mean?
Love money to worry about that you still got money.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas 132 million, that's like, I'm fine. I'll just live off the interest and get myself a diamond.
You could probably live off the interest of 2.4 million now.
I've got no idea.
There was a time where I remember everyone saying you could live with the interest of a million, which you probably kind of could if you weren't.
Well, I remember people saying that like in the 90s, but I think it's that somebody said to me once, we're now at a point officially where if you have £1 million, you can't retire on that. They said it's like the cost of over a lifetime of all the things of a standard family would cost more than that, I guess.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah. It's kind of terrifying. So yeah, that's why it would be just a source of constant anxiety.
Yeah, he'd be looking at the bank, going, "I've still got a million. Is it still worth a million?
Oh God, it's gone down to 2.2 million. I'm gonna be broke in 5 years." You know, but it's 132 million. You're sorted. You just do what you want.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to give me 132 million out there, feel free.
Yeah, I'll also accept that.
So we did start to touch on it, but obviously I think most people will probably recognise you from Outlander, although you did, I remember you on the first episode of Scott Squad, you've done a fair bit round about the place as well, but I think most people will recognise you from Outlander, and so that took you all over Scotland really, didn't it?
I mean, yes and no. It's like we did, because there's lots of like Kuros and Fife, you know, places like that. You kind of, it was a lot of central belt stuff, like in the castle. I forget its name. Maybe Blackford Castle. Is that a castle?
Right. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Maybe there. Maybe we filmed there. I'm not sure. But we in Stirling, the one, Dune Castle, I remember that. The one where the Holy Grail was filmed. By the way, because we worked at Dune Castle a lot. And then recently, I watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail with my son. And like the bit where Lancelot storms the castle and kills everyone.
Yeah.
That's, you could see the inside bits. I was like, oh, I filmed there. And that was like a green room. Where we, and that was where we, you know, where we would all hang out in between filming. So yeah, we'd go a lot of
the
places.
The Holy Grail, sorry, just jumping on, the Holy Grail as well, that's where they were supposed to go to lots of different castles and it all fell through and they only ended up with the one castle.
So,
every time in the film where it's a different castle, it's the same castle filmed from a different angle.
Oh yeah, yeah, that would make a lot of sense because I think we did spend a lot of time on set looking up and going, that's the, their father smells of elderberries. That's the wee hill where they all hide, that kind of thing. Yeah.
I fart in your general direction.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But we filmed a lot, mostly in the central belt. So, and surprisingly, we filmed a lot just outside Cumbernauld. Like, there's a lot of scenes that are basically just a hill or a field that's like 2 miles outside of Cumbernauld.
What's it called?
Exactly. Yeah, you'd be surprised. There's, on the one hand, there's a lot of rare undiscovered beauty around Cumbernauld that people probably aren't aware of. But at the same time, it's like, guys, come on. Have you seen the rest of Scotland yet? I know this is close to the studio, but but yeah, we did go up to Aviemore and like the up in the Highlands. We spent a week in Aviemore, which was quite nice.
I mean, forgive me if you weren't through here, but I know that they filmed a lot in Edinburgh as well.
I think, yeah, I was gone by the time they did the Edinburgh City Centre stuff. But yeah, that would have been nice. Although they did film, like, Roslyn Glen is not that far. Technically, it's walking distance from where I live. So that was nice. When we filmed in Roslyn Glen, that was literally a 5-minute ride in the car home. So,
and it was like, I love how you've went, technically it's walking distance. I'm not going to walk it, but technically it's walking distance.
It's like a 45-minute-hour walk, I think. So it's like 4 or 5 miles.
Right.
But it's a very quick car ride. So yeah, that was a treat. But yeah, they found a lot of interesting locations, I think. And that's why there's so many tours now as well. There's lots of people are running these tours because they're all pretty close together, a lot of them. Like, it's basically Edinburgh, Glasgow and everything in between. And so you can't just get in a car or a bus when you're here and just go around and see all these famous locations. One guy can take you around everything. But yeah, it's so lots. I'm not sure where most of them were. But I just got picked up and took there.
It's kind of, where are we going today? Oh, we're going to this place. And by that point, it's already out your head.
Yeah. It's like, you know, when people introduce themselves to you and you're like standing there thinking, right, remember their name. I don't know what their name is. I didn't hear it. I was too busy thinking. It's like that, but with the places. I was like, where are we today? Oh, we're in, like, remember this one. No, it's gone. Don't know where we are. It's a field.
I think I started a long time ago where I just very quickly called someone mate after I met them so that they get in their head that that's what I call you. Because if I'm not going to see you 3 or 4 times within the next, you know, short period, I'm not going to learn your name. I'm sorry.
I'm not good at learning names. It takes me ages to learn somebody's name. And it annoys me even more when someone tries to, like, call you on it. Like, oh, you don't know my name, do you? I'm like, well, you know what? There's an actor called Stephen McCall. He's a lovely guy. But
I
remember
his name.
Yeah, I met him for the first time 5 times. So, like, and it wasn't my fault. I knew who he was because I was a big fan and I liked his work. And every time I met him, and it was in a different environment, I met him at a stand-up gig that I was doing. I met him when he came into my college to talk to my class. I met him on a job. All these times I'd be like, hey man, how you doing? He's like, hi, Stephen. And I'd be like, oh, you don't have a clue who I am. But I don't see that as his fault. I see that as my own failing. You know what I mean? That's like, oh, well, I'm clearly not interesting enough or I've not made enough of an impression on him for him to remember who I am.
Yeah.
That's on me. So when people test you out on it and they're like, you don't know my name, do you? I'm like, well, no, I don't. You know, Facebook has taught me that I meet at least 500 people a year. And there's no way I'm remembering all of their names.
That's fair. That's
so,
fair.
You know.
Every now and again, I do a cull on Facebook. Yeah. I'm like, I met you twice and I haven't seen you for 10 years. Why have I still got you on here?
It is what it is. It's more a directory than anything else now,
yeah,
I think.
It just won't. So if someone was going to come, because obviously I'm very lucky that the people that watch the channel and listen to the podcast and things, they're from all over the world. It's cool. You know, a lot of Americans, a lot of Canadians, a lot of Australians, a lot of people from Europe. A lot of them have got Scottish ancestry, or they're expats, you know, moved away when they were a kid, and they've never really been back. So and I love that they all reach out and they're saying, oh, what's it like here, or can you tell me hints or here, and things like that. And I'm very actually honoured when they do it. It really means a lot. If someone was going to come, what would be your top tips for them coming to Scotland?
To Scotland?
Yeah, in general.
Well, I would say, like, don't worry about the weather that much, because, you know, like, the tourists in Edinburgh in August are really easy to spot because they're head-to-toe in waterproofs. And my advice would be, like, it's a bit of rain. Just take an umbrella. You'll be fine. This isn't, like, the top of Ben Nevis. It's also in a city centre, in an urban location. There's lots of places to shelter. So if the rain comes on, you can always go inside a building or underneath a canopy. You know, it's not like you don't have to be dressed up like you're, you know, worried about getting airlifted in 2 hours because of the weather. But yeah, always have an umbrella on you. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I never really know what it is that people expect to see when they come to Scotland. So I think, like, if ever I go somewhere, I want to see the things that they're famous for, but I also want to kind of subvert my expectations. And I also want to see things that are a bit similar to what I do. Like, when me and my wife went to New York, the thing that I wanted to do was go to comedy clubs, because I love going to comedy clubs here. And I'm like, I want to see what this piece of culture is like in a different culture, you know.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I guess it's like, you know, just do what you want.
I think that's good, and I would probably agree with that as well, that when I go places, I want to see the kind of things that I do, but how they do it. I think that's, you're completely right, that's a great
I know, thing. I don't mean I want to go to a McDonald's, or I want to go somewhere that does Scottish food, not bothered about that, but I do want to see, I don't know, I want to see what kind of shared culture we have.
Yeah.
I guess. I think that's more, it's like looking for that common bond, I think. And also, I'm one of those guys, I'm not really into the touristy stuff, not hipster or anything, but I don't really, like, I don't want to go and see the Statue of Liberty. I'm like, I've seen it in films, it's fine, I know what it looks like. But I do want to kind of go and feel like I live there for a little bit, or feel like a part of the place that I am. So, I don't know, in Edinburgh, if you're a tourist, if you want to feel like you're from Edinburgh, just walk about muttering complaints after they happen. You know,
there's certain things, I think, if you want to be in Edinburgh, you have to tick off to go, right, I live here now. Obviously, yeah, you get unhappy about the amount of people at the season, at the touristy seasons. Yeah, I think that at some point you have to have that feeling. You have to at least see a Proclaimer or Rebus wandering about at one, not Rebus, Ian Rankin wandering about at some point.
I've seen a Proclaimer, yes.
I've seen a Proclaimer wandering
about. I can't tell you which one, but yeah.
Oh, I couldn't tell you either. But I do remember the first time I saw a Proclaimer walking by, I was like, yeah, I live here.
Yeah, yeah. There he is. Yeah, I was in the meadows, just walked past, I'm like, oh, there he is. I've seen him in the wild. I live here now.
Yeah. Last but by no means least, I like to do what I call difficult questions for us Scots.
Okay.
Okay. So, Iron Brew or whiskey?
Iron Brew. I'm not a big fan of whiskey at all.
You know what, like, it's probably a 50-50 split. A lot of people that I spoke to are not whiskey fans.
I mean, it tastes very unpleasant. I've had some nice whiskies, but I think, yeah, it makes me quite ill. Although, saying that, if I had the choice, and depending on the company I was keeping, I'd quite like to try an Iron Brewed whiskey. If you're in one of those kind of pubs where everyone's a bit snooty about whiskey, go up, order the nicest whiskey they have, and a can of Iron Brew, and just mix them.
Just watch the heads just explode.
Just to wind them up. There's no rules to whiskey. I'll do what I want. So that's capitalism. You know, deal with it.
That's right. Shortbread or tablet?
Tablet, definitely. I mean, everybody's mum made tablet at some point, surely.
Yeah.
My mum used to make tablet.
Not my mum, my gran.
Yeah, I love tablet, definitely. It's crazy how good it is. And also, it's like the sweetest thing on earth.
Yeah, it really is. I've had a lot since I've started doing this, and I always finish with the same set of questions, essentially, depending roughly where people are from. And the more and more people from outside of Scotland, because everyone knows what shortbread is. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows what shortbread is. But more and more people are like, what is tablet?
Yeah.
It's difficult to explain. It's essentially just sugar.
It's, yeah, and condensed milk as well.
Yeah. Have you ever tried to make it?
I think we tried to make it once, but it was really difficult to make it set. And we also discovered that condensed milk on its own is super delicious. So, like, why add stuff to it? You're just putting a hat on a hat, aren't you?
Open the tin and start opening,
really. Yeah. Well, it's like my, you know, our parents' generation, when they were kids, they would have, like, a can of condensed milk as a wee treat. Instead of, like, a dessert, you could just have a little sip of the condensed milk.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. I'm a big fan of condensed milk. Everyone should try that at least once.
Now you've lived in Edinburgh and sort of Fife around here, so I'm able to ask this one to you. Chippy sauce, yes or no?
Yeah, chippy sauce, absolutely. Have you ever seen the absolute state of Glaswegian chippies? When you go in, right? So this is something I'm passionate about. On the one hand, in a Glaswegian chippy, you go and get a fish supper. You get two fishies, which is nice. That's like, because it's the main event. I want more fish than I want chips, technically. But you ask for sauce, and they give you like a little sachet of ketchup or brown sauce that you're supposed to pay 10 pence for, which is ridiculous. And so for those of you who don't know what chippy sauce is, it's basically just a mixture of brown sauce, vinegar, and something else, maybe? Is it like...
I thought it was just brown sauce and vinegar. I thought it was a 50-50 split.
Right, okay.
So but I might be wrong. I might be wrong. Each chippy might have their own secret version.
Well, that's it. Because it's like watered-down brown sauce, though, essentially, but with like more tartness and vinegariness to it, more acid, you can absolutely lash the whole thing with the sauce. And it's not too thick and kind of sticky. It's amazing. And honestly, it's like... It's shocking to me that people would choose anything but that. I cannot abide anyone who would not want chippy sauce.
I've said it a million times on this, but growing up, it was what I got on a chippy. It's what everyone got on their chippy. Yeah. And you see, when I went away from sort of the central Edinburgh, Fife area and went to a chippy and they didn't have it, I didn't understand that. I was like, what do you mean you don't have chippy sauce?
Where is everybody else in the UK getting the moisture on their chippy from? Do you know what I mean? You go down south or you go like... far north or west, and you're getting a chippy, and the chips are all dry and salty, and like nobody wants dry chips.
I mean, North England, they like their curry sauce and things like that, though, don't they?
Oh yeah, gravy as well. Actually, is pretty insane. But that's the thing. The chippy sauce is essentially a gravy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So like gravy on chips is the same thing. Yeah, but you need that moisture, and also if it's like 3 a.m. and you're steaming.
You need to hydrate.
You don't want like dry chips because, you know, you want something that you can just basically handfuls of vinegary mush into your face. That's kind of, or ideally...
I'm sure you and me have done that together at some point.
Yeah, it'll have bonded together maybe. And like, so like a big thing of chips that you could just pick up a big lump of it and ram it in your face. That's what you want.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Smoked sausage, it's because we were talking about chippies. Square sausage or black pudding?
Ideally both.
On a roll?
I mean, square sausage is all right. Depends what time of the morning you're buying it at. If you get it when it's fresh, it's got a bit of moisture, but it does dry out quite quickly.
It does, actually, when you think about it. It almost becomes a bit bouncy.
Yeah, it's. I think it's like they're better when they're kind of a little bit thicker and a little bit more moist. So, I mean, black pudding maybe, but ideally I would take a bacon and black pudding roll. That's your perfect breakfast roll, that is.
That's nice. I do like a breakfast roll with a bit of everything on it, but I like a fried egg on there.
Do you know, in Kirkcaldy, I designed a burger kind of thing for a cafe that I lived along the road from. I was in there every day, and they called it the Student Grant Special. And honestly, I'm really proud of this. It was one of my biggest achievements.
Is it still there?
It was the Nippin Cafe on Commercial Street in Kirkcaldy. I don't know if it is still there. But yeah, it was two chicken burgers on a cool bed of lettuce with some mayonnaise and some onion rings on the top and a bit of bacon and cheese. And you got that with chips for £3.50.
Nice. I love the description of the cool bit. It's not just lettuce. It's a cool bed of lettuce.
It's a cool bed of lettuce to for a little bit of nature in your in
every you've got to get your greens in there, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. You need veg.
Yeah. Last but by no means least, and this is the hardest one for a lot of people. Tunnock's tea cake or caramel wafer?
Tunnock's tea cake or a caramel wafer. I guess that depends on your mood, doesn't it? Tunnock's tea cakes are more fun to eat, it has to be said, but a caramel wafer is more substantial.
I think a caramel wafer's starting to... Tunnock's tea cakes had the edge, but I think caramel wafers are starting to take the lead on this one.
Well, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't thank you for a Tunnock's these days. I discovered Borders biscuits. They're biscuits that are made in the Borders. Now, if you could
very
try
it... imaginatively named.
A dark chocolate ginger Borders biscuit is unbelievable. It's like the biscuits are so gingery that it's like a little bit spicy almost.
I think they do nice shortbread as well, if I'm remembering correctly.
I think so. They have like a range of top shelf biscuits.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, they're your posh biscuits. They're the ones that, you know, when you've got family coming around, you hide. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're not getting the posh biscuits, you're getting the chocolate digestives.
You can have a Tunnock's. But I wouldn't really thank you for either of those these days.
Well, I'm not going to give you one then, that's fine.
Yeah, don't want one.
Grant, this has been absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing your time, and it's nice to chat to you and catch up as well.
Yeah, you too, man. Nice to see you. It's been a long time.
It has, way too long.
Although we both look exactly the same.
I know, so. I know. This seems to be something that more and more of my friends nowadays, we seem to just, and I'm not a hipster in any way, but I don't know, I like it.
Yeah, the beer's important.
My wife bullied me into it, though.
Why? Oh, have you got a weak chin that she just doesn't want to talk about?
No, I've not got a weak chin. It was just about 4.5, almost 5 years ago, she just sort of went, in the new year, she went, go and grow a beard. Just to see what it's like, go and grow a beard. Because I like a beard, go and grow a beard. So I grew a beard. I've never been allowed to shave it off.
Most guys look better with a beard, as long as your beard grows in nicely, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've got, I don't know if you can tell, but I've got a nice couple of grey streaks coming there, just two, and I'm kind of hoping that they end up like go faster stripes, you know, just a couple of grey streaks.
If you start growing it nice and long, so this is, if you start trimming the sides of it, but just keep the front long, eventually it'll grow like a kind of, you'll look like a movie villain of some kind, or like a Russian strongman or something.
I'm very tempted. I'm very proud of that. I'm kind of hoping the rest stays very pitch black and that just stays, because I'm like, yes, that's
good. Yeah, I'm not sure if this is like grey or blonde, because it's, I'm going to just say blonde. Scientifically decided.
I'll let you go. Grant, this has been brilliant. Thank you so much.
Cheers, man.
That was lovely. That was really nice. You know when you just don't get to chat to someone for absolutely ages and it's really nice to catch up. Plus, he's a genuinely really funny guy as well. Like, I can remember when I first met him. You know, sometimes when you meet someone and then all of a sudden you just hit it off and you have a good laugh. That's what I can remember what it was like when I met Grant. And he's genuinely a lovely guy. So I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed all of the Scottish memories. Please remember, if you haven't already, remember to subscribe. Go back and check them all out. Why don't you go check out the playlist and you can see every single Scottish memory. But keep yourself safe out there. Remember to subscribe to the channel. Until next time. Bye, humans.